Court will proceed to the next case, Mackin versus Jensen. Mr. Danish.
Good morning. My name is John Danish and I represent the appellants Shannon and Sean Mackin, the minor children of Carolyn and Richard Mackin. The Illinois law provides that the vested trust beneficiary is entitled to trust documents, an inventory, and an annual accounting of the trust from the trustees. The minor beneficiaries in this case, through their mother, requested the trustee provide a complete trust document, inventory, and annual accounting. The trustee refused and this suit followed. The motion of the trustee, the complaint was dismissed. The beneficiaries filed a motion for reconsideration or in the alternative to open discovery or to file an amended complaint. All of those requests were denied. The parties agree that there is a diversity of citizenship and that the trust raise exceeds $75,000. One of the documents that's in the record indicates that the gross estate of the decedent was over $750,000 and there was to be estimated a federal tax return which would indicate that the gross estate was in excess of...
Counsel,
yes.
You've said the magic word.
All right.
Decedent.
Yes.
Let's suppose that the controversy here is more than $75,000. Why isn't this case within the special rule that debates about decedent's estates cannot come to federal court even with diversity of citizenship?
That was never raised in this case.
Well, I've just raised it.
Well,
it's a jurisdictional rule. It is a rule that we held about 3 weeks ago, is fully applicable even if a person uses a trust in lieu of an estate. And it seems to me that under that rule it makes no difference. That if we had $1 million, there would be no federal jurisdiction.
Well, if that is the rule, then I would have to say that it's correct. It wasn't raised any place in any of the pleadings, either by the beneficiaries or by the trustee. And if that is the rule, I think that rule wasn't addressed any place along the line. And I guess that in this instance, it may be a question if, like divorce cases aren't heard here, many, many times federal jurisdiction doesn't apply.
Those are the two kinds of cases, family law and decedent's estates.
Well, I'm familiar.
They're heard in federal court no matter how large the stake and no matter how clear the diversity.
And if I know family law, I have to agree with you on that. I've looked into that in the past, but on this, I didn't research it, and it wasn't raised by anybody else. And that may be something that should have been looked at or raised in this particular case. But it's our contention that if there's diversity of citizenship, our contention was that the race of the trust is what applies in this particular case. And the
on that point, Mr. Danish, I noticed that you, speaking to the suggestion of complete diversity, you say the defendant trustee is a Indiana resident. Now, of course, we do presume that you also mean citizen.
So what?
You say they're a resident of Indiana. That is, Jensen is a resident of Indiana.
Well, I think probably the proper word to use is citizen of Indiana because
well, there has to be, yes.
Yes, there has to be diversity in citizenship. And I don't think that question was ever raised that he's not a citizen of Indiana. He is a citizen of Indiana as I understand it. At least that was the letter that was furnished us that the trustee, one of the letters that's in the record, that the trustee resides in LaGrange, Indiana. And they, of course, have contended at all times that in order to have an action before the federal court, that there has to be an allegation of impropriety on behalf of the trustee, or that there has to be an allegation that there is a loss on behalf of the trustee. They admit, though, that the race in this particular case exceeds the $75,000. The trustee also admits that there's been a request for the documents and that the documents, they show that on the documents themselves, that many of the provisions of the documents were redacted so that they didn't get the complete copy of the trust. I think that in this particular instance that the jurisdiction limit is satisfied, when the amount exceeds the $75,000, and I don't think it goes to question of annual income. I think that this type of case, if there was a $3 million farm, and perhaps I'm contrary to what the justice says, no matter if it's a $1 million estate, but it's been our contention all along that the matter exceeds the jurisdictional limit, and that therefore that the should be jurisdiction here.
Danish, just tell me about this trust. Is this trust a testamentary trust?
Pardon?
Is this trust a testamentary trust?
Yes, it was. It wasn't a testamentary trust. No, it was not a testamentary trust. It was a trust, and there was no probate in this particular case.
When was the trust created?
The trust was created in 1997 or 1998. I think it was 1998.
Was that as part of a matrimonial matter?
No, it wasn't part of a matrimonial case. There was a divorce between the parties. This was the third marriage of the decedent, so it was not part of a marital settlement of any kind. And it was not part of a probate, so there was no pour-over will in this particular instance. It was just a straight trust that
established by the settlor during his lifetime.
Established during his lifetime. So the question doesn't come up as far as probate is concerned, and perhaps that's why neither side raised the issue as being a probate matter. In this instance, we'd ask that the we see it's a declaratory action similar to an insurance policy type case where there's a declaratory action, and if we follow the reasoning that are set forth by the trustee in this case, any insurance policy declaration wouldn't be subject to federal jurisdiction. We ask in this particular
case. Excuse the interruption, but am I correct? You said there was no pour-over situation from a will here?
There was no pour-over. This was not a pour-over will, and there was no probate, and there has been no probate action in the decedent's estate. And what we're asking is that one of the things in this case is that the trustee claims that the case of that arose in Maryland, Davidson versus Boston, controls in this particular case, and it's our contention that Maryland didn't have the same type of law that we had. That was some 37 years ago. The other distinction of that case is that in the Maryland case, the beneficiary or claim beneficiary that was bringing the action was not a beneficiary of the trust. It was a they were not vested in the trust. Whereas in our particular case, these minor children were vested beneficiaries of the trust. We'd ask that the this court reverse the ruling of the trial court, permit the amended complaint to be filed, direct the trustee to answer and proceed with discovery, and produce the complete trust documents and all the accounting from the inception of the trust up to the present time.
Thank you, Mr. Dooney.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
May it please the court, Arthur Jarrett on behalf of the defendant appellee, Eric Jensen, a resident and citizen of the state of Indiana.
So you acknowledge the citizenship?
Yes, we do, Judge. There's no question about that. As the issues have been framed below, and as we've presented them here on appeal, the question is whether there has been a satisfaction of the amount in controversy required for diversity of citizenship jurisdiction to exist under 28 U.S.C. 1332A. Opposing counsel is correct. We did not focus on any special rule that might be applicable to a decedent's estate. I can represent to the court that this was a inter vivos trust that was funded during the decedent's lifetime, and so that issue was not briefed. There may have been a will. If there was a will, it would have probably poured over, but that could have been handled through a small estate affidavit, and opposing counsel is correct that there was no probate proceeding pending. Those matters were not of record, and I think in the interest of getting to the truth, those statements of counsel can be corroborated. The original complaint of plaintiff and the draft amended complaint that was proffered belatedly found at R104 to 108.
Do you have the trust instrument in the record?
Yes. Or at least the expurgated version. We have refused, based on the request of one of the other beneficiaries, to produce a complete version. All the pages have been produced with the blotting out. That's one of the issues in the case, Your Honor. So the pleadings, the original and the draft amended complaint, sought to obtain an unexpurgated copy of the Declaration of Trust and also sought a trust accounting. However, neither the original complaint nor the draft amended complaint ever made any allegation of the value of the right to obtain the unexpurgated copy or the value of the right to obtain the accounting.
Has the accounting been rendered?
Yes, it has, Judge. And it's...
What's left to be done there, if anything?
Nothing that I'm aware of. During the pendency of the litigation, the trustee said, go ahead and incur the cost, even though we feel the accounting is not required, we'll tender it, and that tender is reflected at page R94 of the appendix.
So from your view, all of this whole case is simply about an unexpurgated copy of the trust instrument?
Yes, we think that the demand for accounting is moot, and we agree with you, Judge Ripple, that is all that...
I just asked a question. But
yes,
yeah.
We agree that that's all that's left. Now, plaintiff's position is that it's sufficient to allege the size of the race, the trust race. They've alleged that it's over $75,000. We admit that. There's no question about that. They also admit no allegation of fraud, dissipation, misappropriation, loss of the race. Our position is that the value of the race is not relevant because it is not reflective of the amount in controversy. We believe that the plaintiff needed to allege the value of the information sought, in other words, the value of the accounting, which we now think is moot, and the value of obtaining an unexpurgated copy of the trust. And as we've indicated, there is no such allegation. Now, one thing which plaintiff argues in his brief at page 12, I'm going to quote briefly one sentence, quote, trustee also claims that the value of the beneficiary's rights to the trust agreement and accounting is not to be considered in determining the amount of controversy, end of quote. That is absolutely an incorrect statement about our position. It's the failure of the plaintiff to allege the value of that information, which is why the district judge, we believe, granted our motion to dismiss. Had they alleged the value of that information exceeded the jurisdictional amount, we wouldn't, I think, be here today. But there is no such allegation either in the original complaint or in the proffered draft amended complaint. We did rely upon a district court decision from Maryland, the Blaustein case. Counsel has addressed it in the reply brief, attempting to distinguish it. Obviously, it is only a district court level case. It's not binding upon this court. There's a paucity of precedent as to how accounting actions relate to the amount in controversy requirement. But let me just briefly address counsel's arguments on the reply brief. In the reply brief, he states that that case should be distinguished because it did not involve a possessory estate, unlike what he says is present here. But when we look at the Blaustein decision, in fact, that argument is incorrect. There were two parts to that decision. The federal court first discussed Maryland state law. That's where the discussion of possessory estate arose. And in fact, under the definition contained in the state law discussion, we find that in this case we don't have a possessory case because, as counsel admits, there is no present right to income or principal. And so that's the first reason why we think counsel's attempt to distinguish Blaustein is in error. Secondly, if the court were to look at the second part of Blaustein, where the federal jurisdictional question is raised, The discussion is entirely separate and distinct from possessory estate. There is no reference to possessory estate. Rather, the decision specifically says, here the litigation resolves not around the value of the race, claimed injury to the race, or even plaintiff's right to a portion of the race, but around information of the value of the race, and when and to whom, and the income thereon are and may be distributable. The information has not been alleged itself to have any present monetary value to the plaintiffs. This is the only trust accounting case dealing with diversity of citizenship that I've been able to find. I have more recently been able to find two partnership accounting cases. Again, both at the district court level, I found them more recently. They're not referenced in my brief. I can provide the court with citations. They are not trust accounting cases. They are partnership accounting cases, but they seem to stand for the same principle. One is the Mull, M-U-L-L decision, District of Idaho, 1914 case, and there's a newer case from the Southern District of New York, 1990, McPherson versus Reed, reported only at the Westlaw. And so for the reasons we've indicated, Your Honors, we would ask this Honorable Court to affirm the dismissal for want of subject matter jurisdiction.
Thank you, Chair. So I would ask you to submit a 28-J letter with those and obviously copy to Mr. Damisch.
I would be happy to. Thank you.
Damisch. I think the issue has been posed by both myself and counsel for the trustee that the question of the value of the trust or of the information, there is no way to put the value on information unless you know what is in the trust and what the accounting is. And so, as I said someplace in the brief, it's a question which comes first, the chicken or the egg. And in this instance, there's the trust. It's obvious that it's redacted right on the face of it, and we have no way to know what the information or the value of the so-called information is. One of the cases that was cited by the court in dismissing the case is the Rexford case, and that would turn over the question of the name. Now, how do you put a value on a name? And in that particular case, they said there was jurisdiction in that Rexford case, and that the name had a certain value. As far as putting the value on the accounting, you have to see the accounting first in order to put the value on it. So in this particular case, certainly they have admitted here that the jurisdiction is, or that the amount of the race is substantially more than the $75,000 limit, and that except for the fact that it isn't a probate case, I think that the case should be reversed and the case should go to trial. Thanks, both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.